Blog Talk Radio.
Any forecasts for the year ahead? What do we expect to see happening? A couple of comments have come in. I do see you in the house. Alpha Grill says, is M23 good for the East African community? No. M23 is awful. It's just really, really awful. It's cost the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not maybe a million people, and it's the last remnant of 22 years of this absolute conflict taking place inside the boundaries, the borders of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. They're also projected to be funded by smuggled minerals. And so M23, there's nothing good coming out of that. Is there any way to determine the answer to that? Well, we do see the rise of this particular militia in the aftermath of the Interahamwe fleeing Rwanda, where they had committed and engaged and raised the genocide to the level that it was. The Interahamwe were thrown out of Rwanda, and then they went into the Goma region of eastern Congo, and it's been unstable since 1994, 1995 in that whole region. But at a certain point, things mutated into whole nother raison for être, reasons for being. And so if you go back and trace the beginning of this, you can see that the Rwanda were supporting forces inside of the Congo to destabilize and try and unseat and disempower the remnants of the Interahamwe, which is the group that came to power in Uganda and committed the bulk of the genocide. It wasn't only them, but they were the main bulk of it. So it's a complicated situation. I contend the greatest thing that will cause an end to all of this is employ all of the young men of the nation. Get to as close as possible to full employment, jobs with dignity where you can raise your family and build a family. Those are the things that cause wars, internecine wars, to fade away. And the Congo can do this. The Congo is making an initiative. This is where AFRI-AMERS could have been helpful. Congo is making an initiative to begin smelting its own metals. Someone had put up a link. Subway, that's right. Are there any engineers of African ascendance, African diaspora-born engineers that could help facilitate the creation of a spectrum of industries related to mineral extraction, processing, and manufacturing? What if that's too much? What if it comes down to just a basic what's in it for me question? Can that be satisfied? Mm-hmm. How is that to be reversed? I mean, it's being reversed in Nigeria. Nigeria has been calling many of its great minds back to Nigeria as they are moving very, very firmly into the realm of prosperity. And Nigerians in America are helping out their motherland. Which countries you're talking about? Yeah. I think that the main thing that could, which should contribute to it is the what's in it for me. And at this particular point, for young people entering their career, it's money. Many of them see, the economic viability of them staying in the West after they've gotten this magnificent education, or staying in other parts, even China, after they've gotten this magnificent education, they see it more feasible to stay there because they get hooked on the consumerist values while studying in these countries. Materialism. And so let's put the what's in it for me back into it. Africa has plenty of land. The land can be fertile. Africa has these 643 innovation zones, high-tech hubs that are attracting vital young people at the beginning of their careers. That needs an infusion of cash. A major infusion of cash, as foreign direct investors. Mm-hmm. 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 Absolutely, yes. In fact, you're seeing the construction of these tourist attractions that are directly aimed at the diaspora community, the diaspora tourists and travelers. How many of us have celebrated our connection to West Africa by traveling to those horrible dungeons at El Mina and the slave fort there as well? Horrible dungeons in Senegal and other places, including Dahomey, which is modern-day Benin, where so many Africans were exported from that Dahomey kingdom. So I do agree with you completely. A couple of my friends and associates have alerted me to land offerings to build diaspora-welcoming facilities that would be tourism and accommodations, and also looking to build around those areas, build up new central business districts and things. So I see that as a wonderful positive. Let's just hope and anticipate that a robust African diaspora community can be encouraged to support those tourism points and accommodation points, as opposed to continuing to spend an excess amount of our money traveling to Rome and Paris and London and these other places where actually we're being, what's the word when they call it, ethnically cleansed out of? All right, thank you for joining us. We always appreciate you in the house, Brother Junius. A couple of comments have come in. Let me share these. If you don't mind, I'm going to back up. Let's catch as many as we can. DJ Jambone in the house. Well, many of our black YouTube content creators are starting to have their own streaming media provide for their black followers. And that's a good thing. We see opportunities opening up. KC, it's me in the house. Greetings. This was shared with me recently in an email. I think it's in Swahili. Heri ya mwaka mpya. Happy New Year. And we welcome that. Thank you. DJ Jambone writes, what we need is many teachers, excuse me, many teachers in the things we need to learn worldwide to have affordable streaming classes. Some of us have goals to create specific things, especially in media for blacks worldwide. You know, that's a very good point. The handicap there, DJ Jambone, is money. I get no small number of offers from black-owned or black-run, I would say, media streaming sites that are essentially not on black-owned platforms. It's expensive now to get into this realm of competing. We can use platforms like YouTube and a number of others that are out there, Blog Talk, et cetera, that are not created for our people to create distinct content for our people. So bridging that up to where we own the platform as well, Brother Dwara, I have my doubts we can do it in America. I think that Nigeria and other places on the continent, such as Kenya, where you have these tech innovation hubs, are the better place to set up things that will compete against these monopolistic corporations that dominate the U.S. Internet spectrum. Your thoughts? Yeah, I think it's Jubia. I think it's Jubia, yeah, because I've used it not too long ago. Yes, I think it was founded by Nigerians. But it does have some assistance from outside the black community. I do recall that. Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent point. I have been loosely affiliated with the Bibi Tumikasa probably for maybe 8 to 10 years or so. We've had Obadele and other family members. I think every one of the family members have been my guest on LAB Radio. And I completely agree. A Bibi Tumikasa should become a household name, especially among the progressive black nationalist and pan-African communities. Let me put up a link to them for people who don't know about a Bibi Tumikasa. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for reminding me about this valuable source of Bibi Tumikasa, which is also a language instruction institute, and now they've expanded into translation service. So that becomes very, very important as this brilliant Brother Obadele and his brilliant family give us practicality in the things that they offer and expansive as well. And so, yeah, as of next week, we're going to be cutting the hours of the Mastermind back to 1 hour broadcast on Sundays. And part of that time, I'm going to repurpose to join another group which is affiliated with a Bibi Tumikasa. So I'm glad you brought it up. It reminded you, reminding me that this golden, light, brilliant pathway is available for us. All we have to do is find that pathway and step to them and say, hey, I have something valuable to offer that will help us all move forward. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. The There's a comment, a few comments have come in. Let me share this one. DJ Jambone writes this, yes, Africa needs to not only send our people to China to learn engineering, but also to learn coding, 3D printing, and lastly, to learn about the many different types of fungi to use on the continent. Absolutely agree. Once again, DJ Jambone, you have such brilliant insights. I need you, DJ Jambone, to consider joining my upcoming class to get your book written and published in 90 days. Because for so long, I've seen you with these brilliant suggestions, yet at the same time, we've got to formalize the process by getting our brilliant creative ideas into manifestation and into doing it. So, you know, we need to write books that are instructive of the opportunities that are all around and give the people the initial stages of how to get into a chapter on implementing fungi, the range of uses of fungi. I wrote a book called Industrial Hemp, Uses and Opportunities. And I wrote chapter after chapter. I wrote one on the medical opportunities, one about its ability to hold back the desert, its ability to produce three crops, healthy, robust crops per year, and all of these things. You know what became of that book? I got a call from my family in Ghana, and they turned me on, hit me to a group that had gotten a hold of the book called the Hemp Growers Association of Ghana. The Hemp Growers Association put together a plan, presented it to the Ghanaian Parliament, and got the Ghanaian Parliament to pass a law allowing for the cultivation of low THC industrial hemp for production in the company or for production in the country. And they were able to leverage all of this to secure a $39 million hemp distribution deal with a Portuguese company. They contacted me later, and I had conversations with them, and they said the government or one of the chiefs has allocated 500 acres, about 1 square mile of land near Kumasi, to build Ghana's first hemp growers city. And they said, Katie, just get over here. You're living here with us. And that came from writing the book. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Great opportunity. Jamaica should have been the leader in the Western Hemisphere on the cultivation and the proliferation of all types of hemp, whether they be medical marijuana, which would be high resin and converted to cannabidiol, or whether it be recreational marijuana. Uganda did grow, I think, some 8 tons or so of industrial marijuana, medical marijuana, that was ultimately shipped to Germany. So there are many So I'm going to encourage you, brother DJ Jambone, please, 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 when is your book coming out? If you join the group that I'm putting together, the publication date is April 15. We're committed to that. But I did a Zoom class yesterday, and I guess I could put up the link to the Zoom in case anybody wants to watch it. We had a Zoom class, I think about 8 of us joined the conversation on why you need to write and publish your book in the next 90 days. It was very energetic, and let me tell you, everybody who joined it, these were people with extraordinary ideas and visions and contributions, places where they wanted their expertise to be informed. And one of the top reasons to write a book is to establish the highest level of credulity as an expert in any particular field that you possibly can. So I'll put up that link here real just quickly. Maybe just grab that in the background. Any other thoughts about the year ahead? Any predictions about what's going to happen? Economy, politics, social, international? Why do you make that prediction? What do you anticipate will happen? It gives us an outlet in case the hits the fan. Other communities have prepared for that inevitability that the will hit the fan. They call them the preppers. But let's be clear. Part of what the preppers are preparing themselves for is hungry hordes exiting the cities, invading their property. And so that means the preppers are practicing on shooting at black targets. And that is the reality. I agree with your point that 2023 has a very high likelihood of major economic recession. The economic recession, according to my analysis, began with the third quarter of 2022. After two quarters of economic recession combined with inflation, combined with the disruption of the global supply chain, that was when the recession actually began. I'm in one of those canary in the mine careers. I write books, and what people don't buy in economically distressed times are books. And we're also moving into an era where literacy is being challenged. I still contend literacy is the pathway of renewal, revitalization, redemption, and resilience. Tell me your age. 38, so you're young. And that's a beautiful thing. We encourage such activity, especially to be so insightful and experienced at such a youthful age is highly encouraging. And I'm proud to say, as your elder, you stand closer to the stars than any of our generations before, because you stand upon the shoulders of giants. I stand upon the shoulders of giants who stood upon the shoulders of giants, and you will lift the next generation up even higher, and that's a beautiful thing. Yet at the same time, we've run out of time. So we've run out of time to be marginal. We've run out of time to be iffy. We've indecisive. That's the word I'm looking. Thank you for that. And we've run out of time to just hope and pray that everything's going to be all right. Run out of time for all of that. Now we have to ask, what is the hour of our urgency? Shine can't swim that well. And Shine's wife is afraid of messing up her hair. So maybe we need to, instead of Shine swimming home, we need to build a bridge. Shine is afraid of those big fish out in the middle of the ocean. So I do agree. I think you make a very critical point. Africa rising is the redemption. Barack Obama talked about the rising tide lifts all boats in the United States. Well, it didn't happen, Barack Obama. It didn't happen. Not only that, but you produced a lieutenant who's continuing that pattern of empty promises. That's right, especially in declaring a new global Cold War. And the Cold War didn't do anybody any favors. in the 1940s through the 1960s and 70s, up until the collapse of the Soviet Union. Cold War didn't help anybody out then, and now it's become a new pathway by which the vitality is being sucked out of global productivity and development, let alone combine it with this corporate war, this pharmaceutical war against all of us, which we know for the last 3 years. So I would like to think there's good news ahead. Let me tell you about the good news I am imagining. The bridges that you just talked about, what we need to do, Shine needs to swim. Well, let's swim. I am working right now to organize a delegation that will represent the best of our diaspora creativity and productivity. I'm not the only one doing this. I know Dr. Erykah Chiomboro-Kwao has done a wonderful job organizing talented, creative, committed Pan-African people with skills and talents and resources in the Africa Diaspora Development Institute. I salute their efforts. I came up with a vision for the Pan-African Agricultural Development Institute, and we've actually got on the ground doing some work. And also, I'm going on my second mission to the East African community under the banner of the EAC, East African Community Education and Healthcare Mission. It's not; these are not formalized organizations. ADDI is formalized, but what they are functioning collaborative partnerships. Ultimately, with more funding, we can formalize them. To get a non-profit tax-free and tax write-off organization, because I know DJ Jambone was, or someone was mentioning that in the thread, that we could raise more money if there's tax-free donations. Well, you know, I agree. We could do better, because then the white philanthropist will give us money. But if we're talking about what is the basis of the huge amount of remittances that are going to Nigeria from Nigerians across the diaspora, they're not waiting for a tax-free write-off. They're doing it because they know it uplifts their family. It's the same thing with the Ethiopians. They're not waiting for tax write-offs. Mm-hmm. That was the year after we began. Mm-hmm. It'd be literally 20 years on Tuesday, the official 20-year anniversary. It's something to celebrate, but unfortunately, I got choked out of it. It's just like the economic drain, it was unbearable 6 or 8 months ago. And I just had to, for a certain point, I don't want to completely throw in the towel because I have this huge archive, and we do have something established that people do respect, and I appreciate that. Yet at the same time, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, everybody not recognizing what the rest of the sentence is. That's right. A few more comments. Let me get these in. KC, it's me speaking to Kashiba. Talking about Akon, because she would ask about Akon. Akon is a performer who appeared to have been doing good things for the continent. However, he is getting some criticism. Yeah, he's getting criticism because his ambitions were very, very big. He was moving into the field of cryptocurrency and investing in and building in and planning to build a tech innovation city in Senegal called Akon City. He went to Uganda, talked to President Yoweri Museveni, the president of the Republic of Uganda, who also promised them a patch of land that they could build a second Akon city in Uganda as a development place. I kind of like Museveni in that when people come to him with ideas from the diaspora about developing in Uganda, he's been very cooperative, collaborative with them. I'm actually part of an agricultural project in western Uganda as well. We didn't do it through the government, but the government has made it facility for us to be able to operate there and to create, you know, a business hub there. of which we're still working on and developing on and raising funds to be able to invest in. But I'm proud to say we are growing sweet potatoes, and we are feeding local population with these sweet potatoes, and that's a good thing. Don't get me started talking about my George Washington Carver Bulletins Library. You know about the George Washington Carver Bulletins, right? Yeah. There were at least, I think, 44 or so of them published. I have about 37 of them, including bulletins on the versatility of the peanut. He had multiple bulletins on the peanut, as well as bulletins on the versatility of yams. I want to get these bulletins to the African continent, to get them into the colleges, et cetera, and set up facilities on these college campuses to take George Washington Carver ideas and manifest them for the African century. It's a beautiful vision, let me tell you. And the spirit of George Washington Carver fires many of us up and should do so. And his spirit should infuse into a whole generation of African children from Cape Town to Cairo, from Luanda to Mombasa. That's right. So true. Comment from KC, it's me, and said recently regarding business exchanges with Chinese businesses, you might still be talking about Akon, because I know Akon was engaging with Chinese investors for his vision. Regarding business exchanges with Chinese business by selling part of energy sector from home country to China, also not a good father role model. I can't disagree with any part of that. The problem about it is they would have loved for African Americans to step in and take these roles that the Chinese investors and businesses and foreign direct investors are doing. They've asked us all along from way before the Chinese. But Afri-Americans just refuse. It'll be a while before I get the official tally, but my prediction was the 61 days of November and December, which just ended yesterday, but still the extended 80 days continues for another 2 weeks. Afri-Amer spent on average $1,105,000,000 a day in a holiday shopping bubble. What could we have invested in with insofar as sustainable development on our African continent or in other parts where we find ourselves, including Kuchichakalia villages here? What could we have done with $1,105,000,000 a day for 61 days in a row? Well, we're talking about a consumer bubble. This bubble exists over our yearly average spending, with 67% of that is spent on housing, transportation, and food. So if we're looking at a bubble, some of that bubble is being spent on things that will be capital goods that will last throughout the year. People do buy sofas and refrigerators during this time period. But an inordinate amount of that money is being spent on parties, new clothes, hair styling, and barbershop styling for a party that's happening this weekend, on consumption of unbelievable amounts of alcohol, foods that are toxic, especially a whole bunch of sugar, and which then leads to the crises that it makes three of the most deadly days of the year in this particular time period. One of those 3 days is today, one of the deadliest days of the year of people suffering from cardiovascular incident and die before they end up tonight. So we do know that a lot of that consumption is non-productive. We can't even see what we have spent $67.43 billion on. We can't even see it 6 months later. For some people, it's even debt. They go into debt to be able to buy these presents and things during this season. So your point is well made. It's not smart to engage in such behavior. Yeah, we can do better than that. I spent the 61 days, or not the whole 61 days, but at least 2 days a week since October producing a series called What Do We Do with Xmas? And there are 20 chapters in that now. I intend to publish that as a book before summer hits. Because if you're going to do anything about Christmas and you don't start it before summer hits, you miss. And so there's much that we can do. Of course, I'll put it in a book. In an increasingly illiterate society, this is where your answer is. I have this book here in front of me. I think you probably have it. It's called Paradigm Shift, The Next Empowering Pathway for Afro-American Development. The book is just loaded with brilliant ideas, bridge building to the future, and bridge building to our sustainable intergenerational wealth. You know something? I was extremely disappointed that the book sales for Paradigm Shift were just pathetically low, embarrassingly low. I'm working on 44, 45, and 46 simultaneously. I am most encouraged when I hear voices like yourself and other younger generations be so articulate in expressing this urgency to build this bridge into the future. I'm going to do the best I can to undergird, to have a foundation, and to continue to support young people like yourself who are doing this. During the course of this program, I actually came up with another book and started outlining it, believe it or not. And would you like a piece of this book? You want to be co-author on it with me? Okay, then we can do this. We won't be able to do this on the air, or we can do part of it on the air. And what I would like to do is just have a series of conversations with you. I saw Alvin Poussaint, and I think it might have been Bill Cosby, or Alvin Poussaint and one other quote-unquote black scholar, who I have any respect for Alvin Poussaint. But they put out a book one time, and the book was just a series of conversations between them. It was so lightweight that I read the book in like 20 minutes in a bookstore. I didn't even buy the book. It was really, really lightweight. But that was a good, effective way of getting a book out. All right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct. I probably have at least 18 books or so that are about that size, and I sell them for $10. Still, I mean, they sold for $5 when they first came out. I've been updating them and expanding them and reformatting them now for the new format. I think you have some of the newly formatted books in your own category, in your own catalog. But you're making an excellent point. And further, and this is part of the course that I'm teaching, I'm showing authors how to make sure that when someone picks up your book, it's hard for them to put it down. Much of that has to do with the formatting. And as you say, books that are shorter in length don't have to be real, real thick, because people are intimidated by thick books. And also I found that with several of my books, including one I released exactly a year ago called Furiously Vegan, I made it a larger format with lots of big color pictures in it. Is that an easy book to digest? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the pictures compel you to keep turning pages. And if the pictures, and if the picture is complemented by an easy to read page with bullet points and pullouts and things that help keep you anchored in the text and moving through the text, then that makes for a good book. I'm working on a couple of books right now, and that's one of the books I'm going to replicate that style of Furiously Vegan. I think Furiously Vegan was a real gem from my own perspective about my own book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something I've actually struggled with is because I have such a large background in molecular biology and sciences. People say, man, you need to talk to us in ways that people talk to each other. And I actually struggle with that, and I've actually put some effort into tuning in the language to where people commonly can speak. And at the same time, I've picked up books by scholars of my generation, and find that the book is too intimidating. One of the big mistakes is, and I know this teaching the course is, people will print a book with too small a font. That's just too difficult to consume. Harriet Washington wrote this book, Medical Apartheid. I know the value of that book. I was writing about the book before the book was even published. I was writing about her work in that same field. And I enthusiastically got a copy of the book, and I tried to pick it up and read it, and I can't read it because the font's so small. I kind of am hesitant to always reach for reading glasses because I keep thinking my eyes are the best eyes in the world. Of course, I'm on these computers so much nowadays, I got to increasingly reach for reading glasses. And if I can take a month off of the computers, my eyes will rebound, you know. 50% off for the next few days. You've been paying good, close attention. I hope you're going to be in the class. You deserve to be in the class. I understand that. I understand. Well, by any means necessary, the world is waiting for Brother Dwyer's gems to be available. That's right, that's right. Let's begin to wrap it up for today's conversation. This is the culmination of 20 years of rising from the Falcon Forum now to the Mastermind, and we're going to continue the Mastermind even though we're cutting back our hours by one half beginning next week. Your final thoughts for today's program and words to help enlighten the pathway for our listeners for the year ahead? I say, very profound, very profound. I'm going to close with these three particular points. Number one, health is wealth. Point two, wealth is the consequence of applied wisdom. And point number three, wisdom creates the future of intentionality. The future belongs to those best prepared to create that future today. That's the purpose of wisdom in action, applied wisdom. So let's get on this pathway. Health, get the health. It is wealth. Get the wisdom and apply that, or take that wealth and make sure it is applied wisdom, and then take that wisdom and create the future that we would pass on to future generations. Those are my three instructions for the year ahead. Health, wealth, wisdom, future. Yeah. Yeah, KC is absolutely brilliant. She's one of those individuals who I'm doing the best I can to convince to step into the realm of published authors, because whenever she talks, it just is so reflective from my perspective, and she's not the only one in the chat. There are a whole bunch of people in the chat do this. But whenever they write or speak or make a point, it's reflective of such a greater, much greater comprehension and commitment. And ultimately, to have an army of writers all collaborating, cooperating, working together to lift that tree, to lift that pillar, that's what I want to do. I think it's a great idea for our collective book, right? And in writing this essay, people can now get into the habit of getting a book written on their own. So I'm just going to just type that in the chat. I'm going to put up a link in case people want to know more about that. And hopefully they'll contact me and we will get a chance to build together, okay? So thank you, Brother Dwaro. You always bring such wonderful, incredible value to the program. That's why it was an honor for us to accept your acceptance of our invitation to join our community. Ashe, ashe, ashe yo. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up for today. It's been a good day. Also, if you're interested in being a writer, I'm going to copy this link one more time and paste it up for you to check out the workshop we did yesterday, our Zoom workshop. And if you see yourself being a part of this mission, then stand up and claim it as your destiny moving forward. You've been tuned into your favorite. We aim to be your favorite. We are LIB Radio, LIB TV, and livinginblack.com. You can always go to kitty.biz. Look through our catalog there. Your purchases from the books have been our lifeline over most of the past 20 years and will continue to be a lifeline for some of the best work that we will be doing as a collective. And on that note, I'm going to wrap it up for today. I always have a hard time closing out these shows because it's just a lot of love that goes down in the last few minutes, and we can most certainly appreciate that love that we share from each other. On your favorite, we aim to be your favorite. We are LIB Radio, LIB TV, and livinginblack.com. Peace and prosperity to each other.